The Space God Memoirs. Episode 25. I was awash in color. Inky blue and neon orange, pulsing bloody reds and deep forest greens, all swished together and pushed against one another, filled my vision, surrounded me. I could see them and feel them. The reds were hot and fiery, and when I touched them, it was like all my lusts, desires, and angers began to well up inside of me and pour outward. The blues were somber, sad, wistful, weary, regretful. As I swam through them, I either wanted to give up or just cry, though I'm not sure if I had any eyes that could cry just then. The orange was cheery, happy, and upbeat. I coasted through that with a zoom and a flourish. Green was strange, filled with a sense of anticipation, of hope, of good things to come but never quite there. Purple was mysterious, the feeling of deja vu, of a secret waiting to be uncovered, of terrible lurking weirdness and amazing discovery both. Then the colors all swished into one, streaming together like multiple hues of paint all going down a drain at once. They filled my vision, until in their spinning they all melted into a singular white light. That too vanished, becoming fainter and fainter, the white coalescing into dimmer and dimmer shades of gray, until all I could see was a fathomless black. It was all around me, but was there even a me? I couldn't feel my arms or my legs. There was no breath in my lungs, if I even had lungs to speak of. Yet still I was, a single point of awareness in a seemingly endless void. Was this death? Had I died up there in that tower, a victim of one last trap the bastard creators had set up? Maybe so. I supposed for a moment that all the religious folk had been wrong. There was no afterlife. This was it. Just a black, endless void of non-being, with only my thoughts to keep me company. Only random mental masturbation to keep me sane, until that too fell away as my thoughts grew more and more scattered, until finally fading away into the same blackness that consumed all. Nope, I told myself, stopping the dumb train of thought before it went further. But what the scrag was I going to do? I tried walking somewhere, but quickly realized that the thought of walking wasn't actually connected to any legs to do the walking. Same with leaping, flying, shouting, whatever. The pitfalls of being disembodied, I supposed. Well, at least I didn't have any issues to scratch. That was a plus. So I laid back. Okay, not really, but I would have had I a back to lay upon. Metaphorically speaking, I suppose. Nothing much to do about nothing. I relaxed. Nowhere to go. Nowhere to be. Nothing to do. Come to think of it, it was actually kind of nice just being there in the nothing. Peace and quiet. No obligations. Nobody yelling at me or shooting me. No pressing urges from the body to eat, drink, piss. No pain. So it was just me and my thoughts. Those didn't last long either, since there really was all of jack squat to think about there. I fell into a kind of dreamy stupor, like that spot between when you lay down to sleep and when you start having full-on dreams. That state of mind where it's tough to form coherent thoughts, but very easy to visualize. And that's what I did, only without the visual part. I started to feel. to feel myself crawling across the ground, as if there was a ground. I could feel in my mind the nooks and the crannies of the tough, hard-packed earth below. Every grain of dirt, every sharp pebble, all the dried-up old roots that lay stretched across the vast, flat plain that I was crawling across. And then I kind of forgot that I was in that void, and I basically was crawling across some dusty plain. Then I could see it, hazy in my vision, the contours of the wastes slowly drifting by as I walked, not just crawled across them. Even though I was walking over the ground, I could still feel it below me too, as if I was touching it, as if by the very act of being aware of the ground, I was touching and also seeing it. I walked further and further, my slow saunter turning into a rapid march. The further I went, the clearer it got, the hazy flatlands turning into a vivid expanse of rugged desert, distant dunes shimmering in the light of the reflected sun, even more distant mountains looming over the lands. I ran towards them now, my gait turning into leaps that took me over immense tracts of land, far past the wastes. I leapt over the dunes, seeing them whiz below me, the brown, crackly mountains of the Southlands getting larger and larger. One leap took me to the side of the mountains, another over them. I was now flying, zooming through the air like some godly starship, as below, the expanding lands of the world zipped and vanished into nothing. Then I woke up in my bed, at home. I opened my eyes to honey-colored sunlight streaming in through the crack in the window curtains. My nostrils were filled with the scent of adobe brick, mixed with flower aroma and cooking grease. I lifted my head off of the nutshell-filled pillow it lay upon, and stood straight up in the soft bed. Around me were about 20 other beds much like it, each of them with a green Gandhar wood chest at its feet. Some beds were neatly made, but they were the exception, most with covers scattered across the adobe floor, or littered with vine-woven dolls, toy swords, or carved dice. Yeah, I told myself, this is the place. Common room at the children's house. The Vandras Collective. This was, well, home. A home I hadn't been to back since I was a child, when it had looked just like this. I stood up fully from the bed, feeling the hard-packed mud-brick floor, familiar on my bare feet. I took another glance around the room and then shook my head. It remained as real as before. I was alone here. Somewhere beyond the walls, I could hear the sound of children's laughter. Now, a part of me wanted to doubt all this, question it all and proclaim it as some kind of illusion, dream, or weird trick. That part of me knew that this wasn't the Vandras Collective, not the communal home I had grown up in. That place was long turned to dust, and I knew it. But that part of me was in the background right then and there, like when you wake up from a dream and into another dream, and it feels like your reality. I was supposed to be here. It was normal for me to be here and wake up in this bed. And though I did have a little part of me pulling at my conscious mind and prodding me to wake the scrag up, the most active part of me knew it was morning and I was probably late for breakfast. So I walked out of the common room and into the adjoining kitchen. The intoxicating scent of berry bread wafted over me, coming straight from that freshly baked loaf that sat on the counter next to the clay oven, whose embers were just starting to fade. It was all here. The big round Gandhar wood table where most of the kids would eat, and the smaller rectangular one on the side, where I usually spent most of my time. Even my old graffiti depicting a two-headed monster was still there, to the right of where I had always sat. "Oh, hello, Kef," said the one other occupant of the room. She was tall and wide of hip, soft skin save for her two calloused brown hands, worn from years of kneading bread and pulling weeds. She looked at me lovingly with her forest green eyes, smiled. "Mother Galani," I said, my voice barely coming out. "I'm here, same as ever," she noted, casually pulling back the braid of waist-length hair that matched her green eyes perfectly. I was silent, staring into her warm, sun-creased face, unable to speak. All the memories came flooding back to me. All the meals cooked, the stories read before a blazing fire, while all the children gathered around her. All the time Galani gave to swaddle, to feed, to teach to many children of the collective. We weren't even her own children. Not by birth. Not most of us. But she was the caregiver, the one who led all of the collective's people in caring for every child. Unlike other nearby cultures, Vandrus had never taken up the structure of the family. Here, all children were everyone's child, raised in common, loved by all, but with the whole process overseen by Mother Galani. And us kids, me, Rayleigh, and the others, we had all been brothers and sisters. I took all of this in once more. Then, without thought, I stepped forward and fell into her embrace, the warm and soft arms of the closest I had ever known to a mother. I can't say how long I lingered there in that common room, the smell of freshly baked berry bread in my nostrils, feeling the tenderness of a family long past, my mind without thoughts, and my heart content. Eventually, I must have snapped out of it, as I found myself pulling out of Galania's embrace and stepping backward, a feeling of vertigo coming over me, accompanied by an unsourced sense of wrongness. Again, that little voice that hinted to me that none of this was real. "Well, little one," she began, "I guess it's time to head out. The others are waiting for you, after all. You've been gone far too long. There's so many waiting to catch up with you." I took her hand, and she led me out of the room by the front door. We walked out into the light of the late morning sun, spilling like honey over the village that greeted my eyes. Consisting of 2 dozen adobe huts made from the same red mud as the children's house. Between them it was all gardens and pastures, the land green and flowering thanks to the constant waterfall that splashed down from a nearby mountain stream and ran the length of the collective before falling down the edge of the cliffs into the ocean below. The air was thick with the aroma of blooming flowers, the glitter of the waterfall spray. Above, the flarns glided, off to catch the multicolored insects that flitted above the many flowers. Ahead of me, Galani walked down the 3 steps separating the children's house from the town commons. There stood the others. I could hear a collective cheer from them as I stepped out the door. My eyes danced between familiar faces, each one bringing to mind memories I had thought long departed. Sar and Bill, yellow-haired boys I'd played with, the 3 of us pretending to be everything from desert raiders to old starship captains as we made our way across the most overgrown of the gardens. Glitta, pink-haired and strawberry-skinned, was there. Pretty as she was shy. My secret crush, adorable but unreachable. There was Humna and Vujas, Andrew and Tolpas, all the kids I remembered. Old man Levan was there, sprightlier and less hunched than I ever remembered him being, but his tail just as long and as animate as ever, waving at me. Then, of course, there was Bendroth, gray-skinned like me, with deep blue eyes and a stony expression, kind but distant, quiet most of the time, but a big talker when it came to machinery. It was Bendroth who had taught me the value of the old ways, of technology and its uses. I had always imagined him to be my father, though the way the Vandrus Collective went, I was never told. I stepped down, and they all began to surround me, not a stranger among them. Everyone knew each other in Vandrus, after all. It was a community, a collective of farmers and fruit growers who had managed to make a living for themselves in this place, tucked between the southernmost mountains and the ever-shrinking sea, far away from all the kings, knights, religions, and atrocities as they could get. And us kids, me, Rayleigh, and the others, we had all been brothers and sisters. So I couldn't help but wear a huge smile as I dashed into that crowd, was met by a barrage of hugs, kisses, and shoulder pats. Familiar faces, joking greetings, old friends. Only a small portion of me was really remembering how it had all gone down. The waterfall drying up. The droughts. The gardens starting to wither away. The hunger and fighting and killing that followed.
"Come on, Kef,"
said Bendroth, placing a strong hand on my shoulder and breaking that chain of thought.
"There are others who want to see you again. This way."
He gestured southward, away from the gathered villagers. I followed Bendroth as he walked along, across well-tended garden paths that wound their way through orchards brimming with fruit, past the pool where as a boy I would get into mud fights with the other boys, and finally through the gingerberry field, heavy with their sweet aroma. At last he stopped at the edge of Vandrus, where the cliffs dropped off, opening into the ceaseless expanse of sea. A gentle breeze caressed my cheeks.
"Here, Kef,"
said Bendroth, stepping to the side.
"A few other new arrivals, just like you."
There on the cliffside, I saw two figures, hand in hand, their backs to me as they watched the ocean waves. The taller of the two turned around and I could clearly see his bright blue mop of hair, his muscles looking bulkier than ever in his tight-fitting tank top. Burge waved at me, no sign of the wound that had blasted open his chest. I began to move towards him when I saw the other figure turn around, Rayleigh, her curly hair bobbing in the seaside wind. She was dressed in the same bright colors as the other Vandrus natives, a pink flower in her hair, beads around her wrists and ankles. She wore the biggest smile I'd ever seen on her. I ran forward to embrace them both in a three-way hug, my mind only vaguely registering the idea that something wasn't quite right. "I'm sorry," I said to both of them, as I finally pulled away from the embrace. "I got you both killed." Both of their deaths came to my mind clearly. Burge shot by Sir Alien, Rayleigh stabbed by Trevos. All because I was a yug who couldn't keep my mouth shut, got them both dragged into that scraggin' mission. They both looked at me, quite alive, not a splotch of blood on them or even a hint of deathly pallor to their flesh. Rayleigh cocked her standard raised eyebrow at me and shot a grin. Burge looked down at me and then let out a bellowing chuckle.
"Whatever, buddy," he said. "I feel more alive than ever."
"Yeah," added Rayleigh. "And we got plenty of time later to argue who was to blame. Fact is, nobody's dead." "But I saw both of you." Then I peeked back at the village I'd grown up in, which should have long ago blown away into dust. "Ah, Scrag," I added. "This is the afterlife, isn't it?" They both nodded and shrugged, big smiles still on their lips. And then I stood out on the edge of that cliff, overlooking the green ocean below, which seemed to stretch on for an eternity. Rayleigh and Burge stood back, whispering among one another, while I let the cool breeze of the salty ocean blow back my hair, as my ears took in the sounds of whooping seabirds and circling flarn. Finally, after all the wandering, I was home. But, even back in the day, I noted, there had never been a real ocean. Those rippling waves, glimmering in the honeyed sunlight. The fish-like things that would occasionally leap up over the waves before diving back into the waters. There was a reason I couldn't name them. They had never been. The cliffs I saw here descended about 50 feet to a small beach in clearly visible waters. Back then, the ocean was already a dying thing. The last remnants of water, hundreds of feet below. The former seabed a dried-up wasteland. Bones and cracked mud. The only life forms remaining being the horrific and mutated descendants of sea life that now crawled and shambled across a silty desert. What I saw here was something else. Something that would never fit in on any Aruvis I knew. "This place is false," said a voice from deep within. I stepped back, crawly feeling across my being. A sense of wrongness, the same as before. It wasn't Rayleigh or Burge. It was this place. As I looked over Rayleigh's head and at the fruit orchards and the adobe huts, it all took on a kind of flatness, as if I was just looking at a picture of it all, not the real thing. I closed my eyes and shook my head. Then, for an instant, the entire scene shifted. Vandrus became a place of pastel colors and straight-line geometries, bringing to mind the void I had lingered in before waking here. The land was a grid of polygons, gleaming in artificial pastel colors. The sky a latticework of similar strangeness. The people were the oddest of all, like massed bundles of electrical energy coalesced into humanoid silhouettes, each one with an iridescent cord attached to the tops of their heads and reaching up into the sky. Even me. I opened my eyes and Vandrus returned, the familiar scenes of childhood drifting back into my awareness. Rayleigh stood in front of me, a concerned expression on her face. "This is an illusion," I told her. "Some kind of mind game." Come on, Kev, Rayleigh said. Look around you. This is all real enough. I could see the doubt in her eyes. Birds looked at me with arched brow.
Tell us more, buddy, he finally said, scratching his chin.
I didn't die, I said. At least not in the normal sense of it. I just sat in some damn chair and ended up here, in my old bed. Then a moment ago, I closed my eyes and it was all different, weird and glowy. This has to be a dream or something.
Burge let the smile drop from his lips as he poked at a nearby boulder, probably trying to inspect its reality.
Just trust me, I said to both of them. If you two are real, we have to get out of here. At that, I could see most of the people who had been in my welcoming party. Gilani and Bendroth at their lead, coming down the trail to our cliffside. Some of them were shouting my name. I looked away, towards the ocean, appearing so real, so perfect and serene, yet undeniably clashing with the memory I knew. I looked back again, to the familiar forms of those who raised me, who were my caretakers, my companions, my family. I could feel tears welling up in my eyes. I wanted to stay, wanted to play once more under the fruit trees of Vandris, to sing and dance and joke with those I loved, to share tales of sorrowful times long past and horrors long overcome. But then I glanced up into the sky and saw it, a swirling vortex, a rift in the air. There was that nagging piece of me, that me that was more than just Kef, more than just a kid who grew up in some long-forgotten oasis town, raided a few ruins, then got taken up into a crazy-ass quest. That me was an urge to move forward. This was not my place, no matter how dear it was to me, no matter how much I loved these people. Maybe that really was them. Maybe this was my afterlife, my people. In this place, it was more real than real. The air crisper, the vision clearer. The tastes and smells all the sweeter. But there was, despite that, a falseness to it all. Maybe not for them, but at least for me. An inner urge told me I had to go. Had to leave all this behind and face whatever fate had led me to that tower up in Balnar and onto that throne. I looked at Birds, then at Rayleigh, nodding to both of them. Then I jumped, hearing the screams of the others behind me. I leapt from the cliff, straight towards the waiting ocean. For a moment I could feel the sensation of falling, but I didn't fall. I just hovered there an instant. Then I looked at the swirling pink-red vortex and flew straight into it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Space God Memoirs. Space God is written, performed, and produced by A.M. Arctos. Original musical score by Alpha Colors. Various sound effects created by Industrial Strength Records Incorporated.
Please support this podcast by following, rating, and sharing on your favorite social media site. For further info on Space God, its creator, and various other opinions, musings, and thoughts, go to www.spacegodmemoirs.com or follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. If you enjoyed the Space God Memoirs, please consider supporting us by becoming a patron. Check out the Patreon link in our description to learn more.